Hi, I'm Pat Combs, former Philadelphia Philly and Team USA player, and I want to introduce Chuck Buschbeck live in Heart of a Champion.
And welcome to Chuck Buschbeck live, Heart of a Champion. Got a great guest, got a great show for you today, but before we get there, I want to talk to my technician here, Joe Lee, and it's very significant to our guest that I'm going to introduce in a moment. Apparently, the Jacksonville Jaguars have acquired our head coach from the Philadelphia Eagles, Doug Peterson. Joe, what are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely love that hire.
You do.
I don't think so far this offseason, I don't think a more deserving guy has gotten a head coaching job. I mean, he, you know, won a freaking Super Bowl with a backup quarterback against the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, against the greatest dynasty the league has ever seen.
So are we looking, okay, you ready for this? Are we looking for Nick Foles to enter the fold with Jacksonville?
By God, that's Nick Foles music.
That's right.
maybe. I mean, Trevor Lawrence gets hurt late in the season. Maybe then we start talking Nick Foles.
All
but
right.
But for now, I'd like to see what Dougie P can do with Trevor Dougie Lawrence. P. I think that's going to be cool.
All right. Well, anyway, without further ado, my next guest is a former NFL player for the Jacksonville Jaguars, former Pro Bowler, and we'll get into the point spread too. Almost, I believe, 1,000 points. You're up in the 800s, what I understand. And his name is Mike Hollis. And Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chuck. How's it going?
I'm doing good. Now, we canceled last week. We had a little bit of snow, but it kind of got dicey up here. You're in Florida, correct?
Yes, I'm in Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Oh, God. Is there any, like, places available down there? Because that's what I was thinking. I would like to be down at the beach right now.
There are some, but they're going fast.
Is it expensive?
Well, it's getting expensive because of the demand.
Yeah.
A lot of the people have the same opinions you do. The same ideas. Like, let's get out of this cold weather. Come to the warm weather.
And some other stuff. Your state does different things than other states do. So, but anywho, welcome aboard. And I want to get your thoughts first. Let's start with football first and current events. So, as I was just talking to my producer here, Joe Lee, Doug Peterson, you know, former Eagles coach, is heading to Jacksonville Jaguars as the head coach. And obviously he is the one coach that has won a Super Bowl here in Philadelphia. So even though after that, you know, the kind of the wheels fell off the bus and such, but what's the buzz down in Jacksonville with Dougie P coming down?
Well, it's fairly new. I've heard mixed emotions about it. I heard mixed emotions about Byron Leftwich when they were considering him as a head coach. I wasn't a big fan of that move. I just, you know, personally don't think that he's ready for a head coaching job.
Yeah.
And we, you know, historically the Jaguars have had a, you know, obviously with Urban Meyer as a head coach who has never been a head coach in the NFL. We see how that worked out for us. So I think there's some experience that needs to be had as the head coach. And I think it's a great move. And I think there's more positive feedback from people here locally about Dougie P as our new head coach.
Well, I tell you what, and you talk about no experience. And we ran into the Chip Kelly experience here, and he went back to UCLA. But it is a big deal. In Philadelphia, and I know you've obviously played, you know, in the various stadiums, but there's different crowds, there's different type of people in those crowds, and all good people. But Philly has a thing about them. They're tough. They want to win, and they're hard on their own team. But if you attack them from the outside, they don't quite care for you. And I think we ran into that problem one year with the Minnesota Vikings fans. Yeah. They came here and they started. Anyway, but
they faced the Rocky statue.
So all hell broke loose from that. So the Jacksonville Jaguars, where are they at now?
Are they in a total rebuild as of Urban Meyer leaving now? Where do you see them at right now?
You know, it's very confusing because every year we've been through a rebuild. There really isn't I don't have a good answer for it. I'm just as baffled as anyone else out there. Obviously with the new quarterback and the new system, which was Urban Meyer's system, you know, last year was what it was, but I think the quarterback has always been kind of an issue with the Jaguars, but I think more importantly, people will realize our offensive line has never been the same since the days I played.
Yeah.
We had an incredible offensive line. We had a very mobile quarterback in Mark Brunell. Mark made plays happen when they shouldn't have happened, kind of like a Brett Favre sort of attitude and physical ability. We haven't had Trevor Lawrence has done great with regards to his running abilities and his playmaking abilities. Yeah, he's made some mistakes, but obviously that's for a young guy to learn from. But again, I really don't have a good answer for you. We're always rebuilding. You know, part of the problems I think kind of come from our ownership. You know, Shad Khan's been a little bit, you know, distant from the Jaguars. He doesn't know much about football, and I know that from personal experience just meeting the guy. And, you know, some of the decisions he's made as the owner of the team have not been consistent with some of the ways things were when the Weaver's on the Jaguars.
Yeah. Well, talking about the Jaguars, you were there most of your career, and a cup of coffee with the Giants later on and the Buffalo Bills. What was your experience with the Jaguars, and what kind of system did you play under? What was football like when you played? I remember back when I played, and we had a brief conversation about this, that, you know, I kind of actually followed the Jan Stenerudes and then Gary Yepremians, you know, before me. So you had your you know, kickers before you. Was there someone that you looked toward and said, you know, I want to do what he's doing? Were you an athlete at all, or was it just kicking? And you have your own system at kicking. We'll talk about your football camp a little bit later, but take us into the realm of the Jacksonville Jaguars with Mike Collis kicking and growing up and wanting to be a professional kicker. How did that all evolve?
Well, you know, starting out with, you know, people that I admired or looked up to. One day I went out and got the mail from my house in a small city of Spokane, Washington. And Morton Anderson was on the cover of the Sports Illustrated magazine that was delivered to the house.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, not to say that I admire, well, I clearly do. Morton's a great guy. And I've met him a few times, played against him a few times. And just class act guy, just humble, down to earth. So I really admired that about him after, you know, meeting him after many years of looking up to him in a way. But, you know, playing soccer as a kid, I was kind of an athlete. I wasn't the most athletic by any means. Mm-hmm. I was able to be just kind of got barely on the varsity soccer team. You know, and when, you know, growing up playing soccer so much, I always had kind of a decent leg. I'd take the penalty shots and I'd just kick really hard, you know, and that obviously transferred into the kicking. And when I was kicking and, you know, I played football, my first year of organized football was in the eighth grade, of course. So that was middle school and they had a lightweight and heavyweight team. So clearly I was a tiny guy. I was literally like 82 pounds in eighth grade. That's what I wrestled.
What?
Yes, I was small, like really small. I still am short, but I'm not as small as I used to be, clearly. But so I played on the lightweight team and for obvious reasons and for good reasons. I didn't want to get killed, right? So I played other positions. I played kicker, punter, you know, wide receiver, DB. But going into high school, actually my ninth grade year, that's when the lightweight and heavyweight, you know, groups disappeared. It was just a free-for-all. Anybody plays, right? So, and I didn't know at the time that we could be, you know, I could just be a kicker on the team. I didn't really think that was possible. I didn't hear of anybody doing that. So I didn't play my ninth grade year, but going into my 10th grade year, I had a brother that told me that they had a kicker on the team and he was older than me, a couple years older. And he had said, yeah, he's just a kicker. That's all he does. And I said, wow, that's crazy. I had no idea that was possible. So I just took a chance and tried out for the soccer or for the football team. And I made it as a 10th grader, as a sophomore.
So you didn't even play at another position, whether it be D-back or running tailback, whatever. You just went right on as a kicker. Did you play soccer at the same time?
Yeah, yeah. So in the Northwest, the soccer seasons didn't start until spring, and the football seasons obviously were in the fall. But so I was able to play both. And, you know, as a kicker, that's all I did is kick a football, and soccer, obviously, you're running around and doing some other things. But the skills go hand in hand, clearly. So that was an easy decision for me. But when it came time to, you know, when I graduated high school and go off to college, I wasn't anywhere near having the abilities to play soccer in college. And I knew that pretty quickly. So I had a really big passion for football. So it was a very easy decision for me to just move forward with kicking footballs and see where I can go. And even that was a struggle getting onto some teams, even though I was the best guy in the league. In the league I was, you know, in high school, I was my senior year, I was the number one kicker. And Travis Hansen was the number two kicker.
Oh, really?
Travis was the brother of Jason Hansen. So we all grew up in the same area. I actually played soccer.
Oh my gosh.
Jason and Travis Hansen both. Yeah.
So now, usually, and a lot of times, and when I played way back when, I was the punter as well. But when you get to the higher level, you realize there's other people that, you know, okay, you need to surrender one to the other. And you obviously went the way I went, and the place kicking thing, it just kind of evolved that. This is the card you were going to play. Is that kind of how it happened with you after high school?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the passion that I had for the skill of kicking was primarily what drove me to challenge myself and get as good as I can get.
It's great having you on the show because I finally get to talk to the brotherhood a little bit. You know, they don't understand us a lot of times, right? So we're kind of off on our own, and we're doing our own drill. They didn't even care if I bench pressed or so. I always ran with the linemen. They had the easiest times to make and such. So when I began kicking, this was new. We were going from the Ray Guy, Mark Mosley type straight on kicker to the sidewinder. Okay, And as that evolved, I was a soccer player, and yes, I did the same thing. I took all the penalty shots. They just said, kick the ball hard. You know, you got a good shot at it. If you hit in the corner, it's even better, right? So what do you do different? Because I just lined up at the ball back then. I just lined and said, this feels natural, like you're taking a six-yarder in soccer, right? I said, this feels natural, which is what we're going to go with. And that's how we kick. But you have perfected a certain style. We'll talk about your kicking camp too. But you perfected a certain style. What is that style that you worked on that made you so efficient? And correct me with the numbers. You have approximately over 870 points. Am I close to that?
My NFL career had 978.
Oh, for two other teams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. And obviously that's a really big deal. Are you second on the Jaguars team in scoring in the history of the organization, right? Okay.
Yes.
So you're obviously doing something right. What is that something right that you were doing?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit more than just a short explanation, but in a nutshell, and you're going to think I'm crazy, but not caring where the ball goes.
I get it. Yeah.
You know, trusting my form and my technique to do the work for me. And you had mentioned that you just kind of lined up and found a spot and then kicked it. I would refer to you as an athletic kicker. So you just kick that ball athletically. So you are more or less steering and guiding and trying to manipulate a ball to go a certain direction.
Right.
I'm not. I line up, and my lineup is very meticulous and very specific and tedious. And when I get to my spot, and the angle that I've chosen and what I do between the time I start my approach and the time the ball's kicked and after, obviously with the follow through, all of those fundamentals within that period of time and from that angle and distance from the ball, all of that stuff is responsible for making the kick. Not my athletic ability, not my my mindset of steering or guiding or trying to direct a ball a certain direction. That's the biggest difference, and that's something I teach in my academy. And it's challenging at times because if you don't trust your form and technique, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I was somewhat successful, obviously, in the NFL, is the fact that if I mishit a kick or if I missed a field goal, you know, I kind of knew then and there what I did wrong. Mm-hmm. So the next one, I would just go back to my basics and not worry about where the ball went. Just focus on my technique a little bit more and make sure I don't do that same thing I did the previous kick to miss it. And that's where I think some athletes who can be pretty good, and this is what I tell most guys, I say, listen, if you want to kick it athletically, if you want to steer, guide, or direct the ball, you are only going to be as good as your athletic ability. So if you're a great athlete, you might be a great kicker. If you're not a great athlete, you're probably not going to be a very good kicker. So, you know, when it comes down to the time when you're kicking that field goal, if you have just that athletic mindset where you're steering the ball and then you miss it, what are you going to do to change the next one? Mm-hmm. What's going to go through your mind to like, oh, what'd I do? You have no idea what you did wrong. You just thought, oh, I was going to try to steer it again. Maybe I'll just aim a little tighter or do something. You know, again, there's not a lot of answers for athletic kickers who just try to steer and manipulate the ball. When you get mechanically sound and you understand what it is you're doing mechanically, then you can make some corrections. But if you don't, if you're not doing any mechanical things, you have no idea what to do.
Now, did you take in other programs and then develop your own? Did you understand how your muscle structure worked, how your lower back, you know, provided the power that you needed? Was it a stop and plant? Where did your hips need to be? And where did that all come from?
That all came from my mentor. A guy by the name of Jim Gattano was a kicker back in high school for my same high school coach, but 12 or 15 years prior. I think he's about 15 years older than me. Jim is my mentor. He is the guy that's taught me everything I know about kicking. He is my business partner, my kicking academy now. Jim introduced me to a totally different way of kicking and thinking, really. And that's really what we're doing now to this day. And I was hoping that, you know, by now, 15, almost 16 years into this business, that we'd have guys that would really have really grasped onto the whole entire mental and the physical and all the stuff we're teaching. But there's still a little struggle in some kids and how they're, again, they're getting too concerned about where the ball goes. So when they go out on the field and kick, you know, on the goalpost, they tend to, you know, now try to steer the ball because that's the most important thing, is to make the kick. But Jim taught me otherwise. And again, I met Jim when I was in high school. He came out once every couple of weeks to kind of work with the kicker because he knew our coach, obviously played for him. Yeah. But I, you know, as a high school kid, I didn't really listen a whole lot. You know, it was kind of like, I was kicking okay at the time. And, you know, you get a little stubborn and like, who's this guy? He's telling me what to do, you know? I did listen to him and I did take some things down, but again, he didn't tell me a lot of the stuff that he told me, after we reconnected. And so if you fast forward a couple of years, you know, he helped me through my senior year of high school, helped me kind of get recruited a little bit. And that's a whole nother story, because that was the challenge in itself, getting on to go to college and get a scholarship and all that. I was overlooked by tons of schools that I definitely thought I should have been able to play at.
Was the reason why, did you have the strength in the leg? What was the reason? Because you obviously had a fantastic career. How does someone look by you? I mean, I don't understand. Explain it to me, please.
Well, it was my size. It was Travis Hansen. Being the name brother of Jason Hansen. Travis went on to the University of Washington with a full ride scholarship, and I went to junior college in Washington State, you know, for 2 years. And then even after my junior college, after being a blue chip All-American, I still didn't get a scholarship offer to come into school. I actually got the scholarship after I committed to the school, University of Idaho, of course.
Yeah.
So even then, that wasn't enough for these. And I'm telling you, it was my size. It was just, I think it, even with Tom Coughlin, the Jaguars initially gave up on me. They thought, oh, you know, your form's great. You kick really good. You know, your technique's good. You hit a really good ball. But, you know, Tom Coughlin, he wants a bigger kicker.
What's bigger? For so many good reasons, right?
Again, I have a number of hurdles that I've conquered in my lifetime. But my size was the biggest one that I think a lot of organizations and things thought differently back then. Of course, I did change Tom Coughlin's mind. I know maybe 2 or 3 years into my career, I maybe made a tackle or something. And Tom was interviewed saying that, you know, he mentioned, you know, a reporter asked about me and he said, you know, Mike Hollis is not just a kicker. He's a football player, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. That's actually means something, you know? So I proved him wrong about my size, in other words.
Well, I really enjoyed this show because I want to get a little more detail because, you know, I listen to, you know, whether it be Fox, ESPN, and they're interviewing kickers and they're talking, but they really don't get to the juicy stuff that we all know about, okay? And I would like to pick your brain a little bit and ask you when you go into, well, first of all, go over your steps, if you wouldn't mind, and how you develop where you should position yourself in reference to get the most accurate kick possible.
Well, you know, it's a lot more to that. There's no hip angle. We don't focus on hip angle and where you're facing and what your steps should do in a lateral sense. First day kids come and work with us, I'll tell them, I said, listen, little Johnny, if you went to a kicking camp and the coach told you that we're going to teach you how to kick field goals, we're going to teach you how to kick off, or we're going to teach you how to punt. And also the coach said that all three of those skills were going to be almost identical motions. Would you be a little nervous? And of course, little Johnny, like, well, yeah, how are you comparing a field goal and a kickoff to a punt? Mm-hmm. A punt is a very forward motion. And a field goal and a kickoff, they're very lateral because you have to turn to kick the ball.
Yeah.
And I say, no, you do not have to turn to kick the ball. Our biggest thing, and I guess to answer your question, is using the entire body to kick the ball. In other words, because I'm small, yeah, how am I going to compete with my small little, you know, femur of a thigh? It's really small. It's really short. I'm a short guy. How am I supposed to compete against guys like Sebastian Janikowski, who are just monsters out there on the field,
right,
incredibly athletic, and they can just muscle the ball down the field without any hesitation, right? I can't do that. I need 100% of me into the football. And the best way to do that is include my body weight and momentum into the kick. The best way to do that is to swing the same direction I'm running. Who in the heck wants to swing the same direction they're running when they're kicking a field goal from an angle? Right. Nobody does. But I teach kids how the ball can go straight down the field. In other words, you will never, as a right-footed kicker, which we say, I can tell you to do two things that you will never, as a right-footed kicker, ever miss left again in your life. Wouldn't you want to know what those are?
Absolutely.
Here, yeah. Okay. I say run to run in a straight line to a white plant foot and kick primarily the inside panel of that football. You will never miss left again in your life.
Also known as the hook.
The hook is, yeah, but a lot of guys, when they're kicking longer field goals, it comes straight off to the left. Because of the way they're kicking. And I can go in for hours on the kicking method and what I can prove so many people wrong about everything that they think about kicking. And it's just comical. But the problem is sometimes they think I'm a little crazy. Like, how in the world are you doing that? Why wouldn't you want a big backswing? Don't you need a big backswing to make the ball go far?
Yeah.
No, you don't. You need your body forward momentum, and you can't have a big backswing with forward momentum. Most kids can. Now, there's athletic guys that can get away with, you know, they have really fast legs. They can still go through the ball really well with a huge backswing.
Right.
But guys tend, and here's the catch. Here's the basic nutshell of what I'm referring to. You compare kicking to golf. I'm sure you compare kicking to golf. Everybody does. I don't. I don't like that analogy because it's not. A golfer is stationary. Okay.
Right.
He has to have a big backswing, especially on a drive. He has to use a lot of torque and hip and rotation and all that stuff. He has to use all this combination between the upper body, lower body, and all that stuff at one specific spot in time, right, on the course. Right.
Yeah.
As a kicker, you ever seen the movie Happy Gilmore?
Yes.
Okay. What does Happy Gilmore do?
Takes a running approach. I got it.
He asked for momentum to a golf swing.
Yeah.
I know that's a little, you know, unrealistic, essentially. Maybe in 20, 30, 40 years from now, they'll start doing that. that would be comical. But kicking is just like Happy Gilmore. Obviously, that they don't do that. But you, as a kicker, you have to run up to where a golfer would stop. Mm-hmm. You have to run up to that plant foot. But if you compare it to golf, then you're the same guy that says, yeah, I want to run up to the ball with all this momentum, stop like a golfer would be standing next to the ball, and then swing my leg. That's what most guys do.
Yeah,
that's wrong. That you're not going to get the best out of you if you do it that way. The best that you can do is get 100% of you into the football itself. You can't get 100% of you into that football itself if you're standing in one spot.
Is that the plant leg and your drive, and you want your force not only for the leg to get out in front of you or to bring your whole body with it?
The plant leg itself, plant foot, I always say, you know, I tell guys to imagine you're kicking a ball that's out in front of you. which puts your body kind of back in this sense here when you're back behind the ball.
Right.
So yeah. So, but at the same time, you have to continue that forward momentum as much as you can. So it's a little challenging, but once, and again, I'll be 50 in May, but I have to demonstrate. And that's what I'm saying. I have to physically show these kids that the stuff I'm telling them works, because if I can't show them, it's going to be very difficult for us to prove to them that it works because of how weird it is. Like, hey, that, there's no way the ball's going to go that way. If you do, yeah, it will. Trust me. Watch me.
So we're going to get into the mindset in a second, but so let's just continue to talk about the physical aspect. And, you know, as a former kicker, you kind of don't want to see laces when you go down the kick, right? You want the laces kind of going straight forward. But there's also a tilt to the ball, and this has been my experience. Now, back when I played, we were still using tees on the field for field goals and things, and it was a whole lot easier. When you went to the ground, I realized I couldn't kick the same way anymore, that I had to have the ball actually tilted toward the holder. Where do you like your kick, and why do you like it there? Why do you like the ball where it is, whether it be on the kickoff or with the holder holding it?
Well, the good news is I don't put a lot of stress on my holders because I say, just put the ball straight up and down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What you're referring to is that lean towards a holder, so a lean away from you, so that it kind of more or less exposes the bottom of the ball.
Yes.
In order to get under the ball, to kick it high.
Right.
I don't do that. Okay. I don't know if you'll be able to see this, but I pulled up a picture of a chalk on a football that I kicked. And, it's hard to see.
Move it back a little bit.
There you go.
Okay.
See it?
Yes.
Okay. That's the chalk line. That's my sweet spot.
Okay.
Okay. So, in other words, I'm not trying to kick the bottom of the ball. And the best way to – some guys lean the ball quite a bit to the right. And – the other thing is very common with those guys is their plant foot is like 6 inches or less from the ball.
Okay.
Okay. Well, they're moving the ball. All they're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a problem.
Right. I got
they're
you.
They're moving the bulk of the ball away from their plant foot. Well, that's a Band-Aid. That's not the answer. The answer is to get your plant foot away from that ball.
Right.
Go straight up and down. Get that plant foot away from the ball. So ultimately, what we're doing is hitting a very large portion of the football on an upswing. That was that back part I keep referring to. If you're back like this and hitting a very large portion of the football on an upswing, you're going to get both height and distance. But I'm telling you, guys don't understand that. They'd rather just chop the bottom of the ball with an open foot and get as much as they can get out of it. Yeah, I've seen, and there's NFL guys that still do that. They come in like they kick it with the forward foot, with the top of their foot.
Yeah.
And the last second, they open up their foot and wedge the ball. And that's how they get under the ball and they get great height.
Yeah.
And some guys get great distance. But I'm telling you, that's what I keep referring to. You will only be as good as your athletic ability. The guys in the NFL right now are incredibly athletic because they're doing things that are not benefiting them. Right. They're getting away with stuff that I could not get away with because I'm not as athletic as they are.
Well, it definitely sounds like you are very technical in your approach and what you teach. So, I mean, I get that. And no one's going to be around very long if they're not technical enough to be consistent, right? I mean, I don't care how far you kick. Maybe, I don't know if they have a roster spot for kickoff guys anymore only, but pretty much you're going to have to do both, you know. So yeah. I understand the technical part of it. What do you do mentally when you go on the field? And talk about this thing about icing the kicker.
Well, icing the kicker is a mental distraction. So what it does is it changes the routine of the game. So as a kicker, you see your team get on beyond the 50-yard line. That's ultimately what I would do. Once the team gets beyond the 50-yard line, I start stretching obviously before then, but I start kicking into my net, kind of get loose, knowing that I could go on the field at any time. Then you watch the down and distance. Then you see it's third and long, and they might get 5 of the 10 yards back. You know it's fourth down. You know we're kicking a field goal. You're ready. I had the coach say, call field goal. When the time's ready, clearly that's what they do. Field goal. Tom would raise his clipboard and kind of field goal. Right. Okay, so there's a routine. Then I go on the field. I get my spot, line up, ball snap, kick his way. Good. Obviously, hopefully. run back. I'm a kickoff tee and kick off. Well, when they call a timeout, that just stops that whole operation. So in other words, and I've seen guys, they'll stay on the field and they'll check the wind and they'll find a good spot and they'll do things that you won't normally have an opportunity to do. I don't like, unless it's a terrible field and I really got to clear a path with, you know, of all these grass chunks and stuff like that. If I got to, you know, do something really drastic to make sure I'm not going to slip or fall, then I will stay on the field. But normally that doesn't happen. So what I would do in that case, when the team called timeout, is I would run off to the sideline. I don't think I'd have time to kick another ball, but I grab a little drink of water, kind of jump up, little stretch a little bit, jump up and down a little bit, kind of shake some things, you know. I would tell that same coach, you know, call field goal when it's time. He would call field goal when it's time, and I'd just start all over. So it's basically just a routine that the other team has stopped, and then when it's time, I just start all over. So mentally, that just puts me in that mindset that nothing's happened. Here I am going on the field to kick a ball.
It's funny you were talking about clearing the chunks off the field, and it reminded me of the was it New England game where they brought the snowblower out to clear the space out for that was a classic moment. When you, other than your routine at the time, what is your mental approach? Obviously, you do your work during the week. You complete the repetitions, the technical work, the strength training to be ready for Sunday or, you know, Monday night, whatever. Do you go out there and say, I prepared enough and I'm, you know, this is what I'm doing. And if I miss, I miss. Is it that simple that, you know, I did my best all week. I prepared for this and for whatever reason, I didn't hit it.
Well, you have to play some mind tricks. You have to play with your mind a little bit because you can't, you know, you've heard the old saying, you know, you can't remember things good or bad. Don't get complacent when you're kicking well. Don't get discouraged when you're kicking poorly. Just, you have to forget about the last kick regardless if you made it or not. It's you're starting a brand new kick. That's good. You know, I've had weeks of practice where I've kicked really well and then game day, for whatever reason, didn't play well. I've had weeks where I've practiced poorly and went into the game and had an outstanding game. So it's just how your mind is on game day. And I think the biggest nutshell, the biggest, thing with regards to my mental approach is trust the form. Again, going back to the whole, mechanics. I can just, because here's the deal. The form is doing the work for me. I'm not doing it.
Right.
I'm not physically kicking this football through the uprights. My technique is physically kicking the football through the uprights. And that's the way you have to think about it. I know it's kind of odd and weird.
No.
If you trust your form and you don't care where the ball goes, that's when you start kicking balls really well. When the opposite is true is when you kick carefully. Prime example. When the NFL moved the extra points back to 33 yards instead of 20, like it used to be back when I played,
right?
How many kickers missed extra points that year and maybe the year after? Quite a few.
Yeah.
There's a lot of missed extra points. Well, tell me, those guys who missed those 33-yard field goals would come into a game and you look at their stats and you realize their 30 to 39-yard range was perfect. When those guys who are missing all these extra points, when they're attempting 33-yard field goals now, they don't kick carefully. They're not trying to, I better make this. You know, it's a 30. You know, it was a mental thing for these guys. When they first started kicking these 33-yard extra points, they were kicking very carefully. They were kicking not to miss. And guess what you do when you kick carefully? You change things in your approach. You change things in your whole operation because you're kicking not to miss. If you kick with confidence, like you would a 33-yard field goal, more than likely you're going to make all those.
Yeah. So is it one of those things where it's an extra point, I should make it, and then you put all this extra pressure on you that it gets maybe a little more difficult? I said, okay, if I miss a 39-yarder, okay, it's 39 yards. But as an extra point, I guess you kind of overreact maybe some, especially early on when they came up with the rule is what you're saying.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You look on the stat sheets, we get reports after every game, they give us all the stats and everything. And you're looking at your name, looking at your, obviously, internally what you've done and all that, but you see that, 2 for 4 extra points. You're like, oh, that is embarrassing. I missed 2 extra points. If you missed 2 33-yard field goals, it might be, it's like still kind of embarrassing. Yeah. It's, dang it. But the extra points, the word extra points, point after attempt, PAT, whatever you want. It's a mental thing for most guys. They just cannot accept the fact that they missed an extra point.
go back a little bit when you were talking about you were playing soccer and you did have a football position, even though, albeit, it, you know, kicking took over. When was it that, or did you have anything else buying for your attention? What was it when you said, either I want to be a professional kicker, or when did you recognize that you had the ability to be a professional kicker?
The day I made it in the NFL.
Not before then?
No. I mean, I knew I was comparable to the guys. Clearly, you know, your time and hang times on kickoffs when I was in college, of course, you're looking at the NFL guys, what they're doing, what you're doing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm right there doing that too.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, my mindset, and again, it's different than most in the sense where I never set a goal. I want to play in the NFL and that's my goal and I'm going to try to get there. I never once did that. My goal, if there was a goal, I'm not someone who sets goals in a sense, not right. like long-term goals. I like the day-to-day goals, man. I want to do the best I can under the circumstances I'm given. And if I can truly, you know, look myself in the mirror at the end of the night and say that I truly did the best I could under those circumstances, then I didn't fail that goal. I did just fine. I did as good as I could possibly do, you know? And with kicking, my mindset was, I'm intrigued with kicking and I'm challenging myself to be as good as I physically mm-hmm. can be, mentally, obviously, be as kicking as a kicker. And whatever level I get to, I'm okay with. If this is as good as I can get, and I know in my heart that I've gotten to the highest level of my personal success with kicking field goals and kicking off and all that stuff, if the NFL is the highest level, great. If not, great. I did the best that I could. So I don't like to feel failure. And you have to trick your mind into thinking that you haven't failed. You did the best you could, unless you were looking in the mirror at the end of the night and lying to yourself, saying, "Oh, I did the best I could," and you really didn't.
Well, that's why we do this show. Not only the physical aspect, which we've already covered, but the mental game that goes on with whether you know whatever performer you seem to be, a musician, athlete, whatever. Where did and I understand what you're saying that wasn't necessarily a goal, and I think goals are overrated, obviously. And I think it's, you know, we talk about, oh, it's all about the journey, right? So, but it is for you. It was about the day-to-day journey. And does it come down to you just enjoying what you do? Is there work involved? Can you do something that you enjoy and consider it work? Where does that fall into your mindset?
Well, of course, you know, it's not work for me when I'm playing a football game. It can be stressful, yes, as a kicker or any position really in the NFL because, you know, the expectation level is so high and you are replaceable any given day. And that's where the pressure and the stress come from. When you got, you know, your coaches expect nothing but perfection every single day, not just on game day. They'll get upset if you don't practice well, you know, and all that. So ultimately, you know, your mindset is to, you know, do the best you can every single day and move forward. And, you know, that's where the stress level. So as far as that being, you know, I want everybody in this world to find an occupation, something, a hobby that they get paid for so they don't have to call it work. I would never want to be, and even to this day, after I've retired from football, however many years ago that's been, I still to this day am always, you know, finding things to do that I enjoy doing. Clearly, I've gotten a kicking academy. I do other stuff as well, but I don't want to be, you know, I always hear the stories about all these people who work so many years and so many hours and days and years of their life has been spent in an office just to raise money to retire. The day they retire, they get hit by a bus, you know, they pass, you know, from whatever, you know, could be bus, whatever, but they're not able to enjoy what they work so hard for. And, you know, even when you're working so hard, if it's miserable, it's not fun, you know, and you want to find something that definitely is fun to do and you get paid for it. So that's always been my mindset. I'm always, you know, trying to be happy-go-lucky and I don't like to be miserable.
Exactly. Did you get any of that growing up? Like what was the, you know, how do you come to that mindset? Like, I'm going to enjoy what I do and that I don't want to do that. You kind of know what you don't want to do and you don't want to necessarily put the hours in for something you don't want to do. Where do you think your mindset came from?
You know, the passion is, you know, with kicking, of course, I developed the passion for it and a challenge. And I think those two kind of go together, because if you're passionate about something, you challenge yourself in being the best that you can be at that, whatever that is, that the passion is. And so it starts with the passion. So, and I don't have a good answer for you as far as finding that passion. That's just up to you and your life experiences. I think the people who are out and about and don't get complacent in a house and just sit around and don't get out and meet people and are not social, not, you know, talkative, I think those people are limited with regards to the passions that they could discover. That's my point. Get out there and put yourself out there so that you might discover accidentally even a passion. You know, oh, this is kind of cool. I kind of like this. Yeah. And then, you know, let the cards fall where they may and move forward with it or not. You know, find something else if that's not really a passion. And, right. You know, it's a bit of a challenge for a lot of people, and I understand that.
Yeah, there's a bit of trust. Like, go out, enjoy your day, and see what opens up, and keep an open mind, and you just may, you know, run into something you like. Was there an individual, a person that was influential in your career that made a big difference? Maybe something they said, their mentoring, and do you apply that mentoring to other people?
I'm going to say a name, Jim Gattano. I referred to earlier as my mentor.
Yeah.
And I didn't really talk a lot about Jim, but I'm telling you, I had an agent coming out of college, and I just thought that that's what you needed to do. And I just signed with, I actually had a guy that represented Mark Rippon. So I'm like, okay, he represented Mark Rippon. He knows what he's doing. When I told you the story about when Coughlin thought I was too short, guess who gave up on the Jaguars? My agent gave up on the Jaguars. We'll find another door. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities out there. We'll just keep trying. When I told Jim that same day, I was kicking with Jim that same day, and I told him, he was furious. And, you know, back then we didn't have, you know, cell phones. So as soon as we got done, you know, kicking, he went to the nearest payphone, you know, calls up the Jaguars and just lets them have it. He's like, you guys have no clue what you're doing. You have no clue what you're talking about. Mike kicks like he's 6'2". Why would it matter what physical size he is?
Right.
You know, and so Jim was the guy that got me in the NFL, not only as my coach and taught me this method that was obviously very successful with me. He was also very responsible for the connections. He actually got in with the Kansas City Chiefs as a kicker. He was one of the older toe puncher kind of guys. He competed against Nick Lowry in the 1987 training camp. And so right after he got released from that camp, and then he tried out for 10 years prior to that. And that was the only time he's ever made an NFL training camp. And, he got cut, you know, towards the final days of their training camp and did really well, competed really well, but he just thought that, you know, his role was to now coach and that, he gave it the best shot he could. And that was his best he could do. And if he got cut after doing that well, then, you know, maybe it's time to just move on to coach. And that's what he did. And that's when he came back to Spokane and started working with me. But I got to reiterate the fact that not only was he responsible for, you know, getting me to the level of kicking physically, mentally that I was, but he was also the sole reason why I got in the NFL, because of his connections. He was the one calling teams, and he was doing more work than my agent did at the time. And so, and the funny story is, after my third year in the NFL, I became an unrestricted free agent. And that was my last year. That year, I actually was really good. That was the year I went to the Pro Bowl. I thought the NFL scoring. So the timing couldn't have been better, right? So I'm up for a new contract, having just gone to the Pro Bowl. I let my agent go, and I signed Jim Gattano as my agent. He actually became certified and become an agent. I'm like, what other best way to repay Jim for all that he's done for me than to sign him as my agent and let him, you know, be my agent and representative?
Obviously, this man was very influential in your life, as you just stated. Was there other teams that you tried out for, or Jacksonville was the only, and you just happened to make it there?
I had some workouts. I had the Minnesota Vikings guy came through Idaho when I was there. The Atlanta Falcons I worked out for. I actually was flown to Atlanta prior to going to San Diego. That was in 94. Flew out to Atlanta, competed against four other guys. Didn't get an opportunity to play there. They signed Todd Peterson. Then the next week I was offered an opportunity to go down to San Diego and work out for them. I signed with the Chargers in 94. That's when I spent that the preseason there in 1994. You know, and then after that, that's when I had some other opportunities. Jacksonville came in to Idaho to look at some other guys, actually. That's a funny story, too, because I had a punter friend of mine that was really good, too. Eddie Howard was the guy's name. And he was a punter for Idaho, and he was a year younger than me. And so his senior year, he was having some looks, you know, NFL coaches and staff were coming through to look at him. And I told him, I said, Eddie, let me know when you get a look, you know, from a team, because I'm going to be on the other end of the field kicking while you're working out. And that's exactly what I did when the Jaguars came through to look at Eddie Howard. I was on the other end of the field. As soon as Eddie was done with his workout, I went over to introduce myself to the scout, Rick Mueller, who was the guy that actually worked me out again, eventually, in Washington State. The Giants, I think, might have come through Idaho and worked out for them. And then, of course, after I got released from the Jaguars, well, my contract expired with the Jaguars. I didn't have to work out for any other teams. I did go visit Buffalo, and that's when I signed that year contract with the Bills. And then after Buffalo, I had to work out for Seattle. I worked out for the Seahawks after that. And then the Giants actually came out and offered me a 5-year deal. So I took that.
So that's how it all came about. You described it. Your punting friend actually kind of opened the door, I guess you want to call it. And you were advantageous in your approach to what you wanted. You knew what you wanted. And you went, would that be a good advice to give to other people? Know what you want and just go get it.
Yes, but you have to be careful about what it is you do to go get it. Like, don't be obnoxious, interrupt the guy's workout. You know, be respectful and be, you know, honest and humble and all that. It's a tough way to get. You know, the NFL is tough to get to, and you have to take advantage of every opportunity you get. And that's where, you know, I've had some friends who, you know, maybe, you know, play some baseball and were, you know, I don't know, like jealous. They're just kind of upset. Like, why did I make it? Why did Mike Hollis make it? Not him or whoever. You know, the thing is, you know, when you get opportunities to work out, you know, the NFL scouts, their business, what they're really in business for is they're in the business for scratching names off lists. Mm-hmm. You know, they create their list of players they want to see. And what they do best is scratch names off that list.
Right.
Okay? So if you have a poor performance in a workout, guess what? You've just gotten scratched off their list. Okay. So ultimately, when you get opportunities, and if you want to call it luck or not, the opportunities are where the luck lies. So you get an opportunity to get an to perform in front of a team, in front of some scouts or coaches. If you don't do well, obviously, I just mentioned your name's gonna scratch out. But if you do well, that opens up more doors. So call it luck, call it what you want.
Yeah.
But the point is, if you do well under those circumstances, you'll get other opportunities, and your name will get out there, and things will start to happen.
Other than the Tom Coughlin incident, was there another moment, maybe in your career somewhere along the way, where you were hit with some adversity and kind of stumbled a little bit and tried to find your way back? Do you recall any moment like that and what you did to get back to what you needed to do?
Yeah. You know, there's been, you know, a few slumps here and there with my kicking career. I knew that after my first year, I was only like 20 of 27 my first year as a Jaguar. And I knew that that wasn't going to be enough to, you know, hold my job, even though I was obviously invited back. So preseason of 1996, my second year with the franchise, I had competed with another guy, college kid, and I think I had missed a couple kicks prior to, and then he got released, and then we were in a game playing against St. Louis in St. Louis against the Rams, right? Mm-hmm. We had just released the other guy. I had already missed two kicks, I think, in the game before that, or the two games before that. So two kicks in a row. I'm coming into this game, and I attempt a field goal early on in the first half, and I miss that one. So now I'm 0-for-3 in my last kicks. My last three kicks I've missed.
Right.
I'm thinking, well, geez, I'm
you're toast.
I hope I get a flight home. Then. Here's where it all started. Then when at the end of the half, we are lining up for a 51-yard field goal. So here I am thinking, okay, great. I've missed three in a row. Now, if I miss this one, I'm totally out, right? Well, we have a guy run on the field late. It's preseason. Somebody didn't know what we're supposed to do. The protection, you know, he just lost his mind or whatever. Just lost track. Anyways, he comes off the field. Comes on the field late. Right. We get a delay of game penalty. We move it back. Actually, I'm sorry, that was a lie. It was 54 originally. We move it back to 59. Okay, so now I'm thinking, okay, are we going to punt? What's going to happen here? There was like 1 second left in the game, and Tom Coughlin, he's a competitor. Yeah. He wanted to challenge me. I don't think that it was all about me. I think obviously he wants to win every game he's in.
Yeah.
But I think he took a good opportunity to make this a challenge for his kicker, if he can make this or not. And I drilled it. I hit the 59 yarder, and that, you know, people ask me what's the most, you know, memorable kick in your career, and that's the one that stands out the most. It was a preseason kick. It was 59 yards. A lot of people don't realize that little old me have kicked a 59-yard field goal in a game in the NFL. But that was the point where my mindset changed. I'm like, wow, I can do this. This was a turning point in my career. And I'm telling you, I don't know where I'd be sitting right now had I not made that field goal.
That's a turning event in your life, obviously. What was your highlight in your heart? What was your greatest moment?
Well, you know, I always refer also to the kick when I was with the Jaguars. We played Buffalo. We played up in Buffalo. It was our first. It was in 96 as well. Actually, 97 officially. But it was our first playoff game as a franchise, Jacksonville franchise. We were, you know, 2 years old at that time. We go into Buffalo with the full intentions on, obviously, us playing hard and winning the game. Everyone else in that stadium, including the announcers and everyone else, there's no way the Jaguars win. You know, Buffalo Bills, or we got, you know, Thurman Thomas, we have, you know, Jim Kelly, we have all these, Bruce Smith, we got all these guys that are just going to destroy the Jaguars, right? Well, we put up a tough game and we ended up winning the game by 3. And it was a field goal that I made. I think there's like a minute and 30 something left in the game. It was a 45-yard field goal that I had to attempt, and it was, the wind had changed. The first half, it was going one way, and then the second half, and I'm talking like laterally, not right, north and south, but east and west. So we're kicking this 45-yard field goal, and ball snaps. Brian puts the ball down, and he kind of leans it a little bit to the right, when actually at the end, after he said something to me on signing, he said, oh, man, I forgot the wind had changed. I didn't really want to lean it to the right. Well, when I kicked it, I hit it pretty good. You know, as a kicker, when you hit that ball, those balls, you're like, wow, that's going to go a mile. That was one of those kicks, right? I hit it really solid. And I kick it, I'm looking up at it, and next thing you know, the Buffalo Bill comes in from the outside, and like late, so late. Like, why did he even jump? Why did he even dive? The ball was already off before he even left his feet. So what in the world? Anyways, he wipes my legs out. I get pancake, like fall back on my back. I'm looking up at the sky. 1 second, I'm looking at the ball going, you know, right down the middle, by the way.
Yeah.
Then I'm getting wiped out. I'm looking at the sky. And then Brian reaches over me, Brian Barker, my holder, gives me his hand to help me up. He said, dude, it went through. And I'm like, with a surprised look on his face, I'm like, dude, what do you mean it went through? It was going right down the middle, wasn't it? He goes, watch the Jumbotron. And I'm like, I look at the Jumbotron, and sure enough, that wind it took the ball right into the inside of the right upright, at the very top of the right upright, I might add. I'm a little pat on my back here for that kick from 45 yards. Those goalposts are tall. You hit the top of the upright from 45 yards, you've hit a good ball, right? So that it skimmed the inside of the right upright and went through.
So that's your most memorable kick. What was your whether it be on your team or another team, was there another memorable moment other than a kick? Was there a team win? Was there something else? And what player or two around you was significant in your career?
Well, you know, I'm referring to kickers again, but I witnessed, because it happened against us, Jason Elam kick a 63-yard field goal.
Yeah.
And at that point, tied Dempsey's record. So right, it was just him and Dempsey at the time. So that was pretty cool to see that. I was very happy for him. He's a great guy, by the way. Happy for him to have that kick, and that was amazing. You know, being around other players, you know, when I was with the Chargers, you know, as a young guy, Junior Seau was still around, and that guy was a stud. I learned a lot just watching him and just seeing his leadership and, you know, seeing what kind of, you know, guy he was. Very humble, very cool, very, you know, accountable. He held you accountable as well. You know, and you know, you fast forward to, you know, the Jaguars, you know, got guys like Brunell, who's definitely a leader and a fun guy and a very good, talented guy. Made a heck of a lot of plays. Fred Taylor, running back, man, just unbelievable athlete. Jimmy Smith, oh my gosh, him and Keenan McCardle, Thunder Lightning. We had a really good squad. So, again, watching those guys, you know, you can't help but just notice how incredible they are. You know, and then when you play against teams like, you know, Detroit Lions, and you watch Barry Sanders just break ankles left and right. Barry Sanders is one of the most admired guys, in my opinion, that I admire the most, primarily because I think I'm a little bit taller than him. I think I got like half an inch.
That's great.
And he runs around like I'm just like, I can't imagine me running a football. I would get absolutely murdered. And to watch him, it was incredible to watch him firsthand. And another guy like Brett Favre, just talk about a playmaker. That guy would make plays out of like, oh my gosh, we got it. Wait, where did what? We're in, next thing you know, he throws a touchdown, you know. So guys like that, just incredible athletes and a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
I find it amazing. And when I was playing ball in college, actually, I was asked to talk about who my favorite athlete was. And I wrote Rolf Benerski. If you remember Rolf Benerski, you mentioned the Chargers. That's what brought it up. And I'm like, he had Crohn's disease and he's battling through that. And here I came down with cancer certainly after that. I'm like, I didn't tie the two together, but, you know, whatever. It was very – those people are very memorable. I remember Herschel Walker and Cam and just running over a guy. And I'm like, oh, my God. And my buddy was Sam Mills. He was a linebacker for the Saints eventually. And he goes, who was the maybe I think it was Barry Sanders. And he just did not want to see this guy coming through the – so – I get it, and I'm so appreciative, and I know you are, and this is where I'm leading to. When we talk about your camp, do the kids come in and talk to you about stories, and where do you lead them? And tell us about your kicking camp.
Well, yeah, you know, kids ask stories eventually. They'll, you know, after they warmed up a little bit, and they want to know, you know, like, what, you know, tell me, like, how was it like, or what would you know? They ask a lot of similar questions you do, but, you know, our academy is we like to focus on the actual skills of kicking. We want to teach kids how to kick a football. And the unfortunate part is there's a lot of what I guess may have started out as kicking academies. There's a lot of guys out there that are the bigger name guys, you know, your Sailors, your, you know, Coles, those kind of guys that have these huge, huge camps. They've kind of transitioned into more like showcase camps. And so the instruction part of what they do is kind of, you know, appears from the outside looking in. Now, it could be a lot of private instructions. I don't know. But it just seems like a lot of kids, and I've personally experienced this as well, because I've offered camps and kids decide to go to other, you know, showcase camps instead of coming to my camp to learn how to kick a football. And I'm like, you guys got it all backwards. You think just because you go to these showcase camps and get ranked that you're going to be, you know, if you rank good on one day, you have one good day and you get ranked high, that you're going to get a college scholarship. They're going to look at more than just a ranking to pick you up, you know? And so again, it's, you know, why don't you learn how to kick a football really good? And then, you know, if you kick well, they'll find you. You don't have to go, you know, showcase so much. You know, I understand why kids do, and I get it. I would probably do it myself if I was young. And you know, I tell kids too, I say, listen, if your coach, your high school football coach, if you're not getting a lot of opportunities to kick a football in a game to get some film, then I'd recommend going to showcase camps, because at least then you can have some exposure and get your name out there and have some video to send to colleges and so forth. But other than that, if you're not kicking well, don't do it, because again, you know, scouts, college scouts are kind of in the business of scratching names off lists too.
Yeah.
So if you go and perform and you don't do well at these things, you know, you're not going to have footage to show anybody, and you're going to get your name crossed off the list. But so our academy is a little different in a sense that we really, you know, focus on, you know, again, we're very prideful of our technique. You know, I lived it firsthand, you know, 9 years in the NFL, all pro, you know, did a lot of cool things at my size. And that's really my, my biggest selling point. It's like, look, look at me. Most of my kids that I work with are bigger than me. You know, these kids, these in middle school, they're taller than me and bigger than me. I'm like, well, look at you. You're bigger than me. So I like to reiterate to them that it was more the technique that made me successful than my athletic ability. Yeah, there's got to be some athletic ability there, but when you combine both, you, you know, the sky's the limit with regards to your potential. So, our academy teaches, like I said, different stuff, and it does take that, you know, some special kind of kids who, you know, take it serious and are disciplined about it. That's the hardest part, as far as our stuff that we teach. We've got kids that come in like maybe once a month. Well, the time between the last time I saw little Johnny and the time I'm seeing him today, he's gone out to the field about 8 times, 10 times, 20 times and kicked on his own, you know, kicking field goals, trying to kick field goals, trying to make field goals. Then he comes in to see me again a month later and, or, you know, the next session, and he's going, he's gone back to the same stuff he did the previous session and the previous session before that. So they don't gain anything from the technique and stuff we're trying to teach if they go out on their own and try to make kicks. And again, there's kids out there that don't want to hear, I don't want to miss kicks. I want to make, well, there's a process. And literally, if you think about, you know, you can't be a strongman competitor when you wake up in the morning one day and say, you know what, I'm going to be a strongman competitor. I'm going to enter this event next weekend. Are you kidding? You got to go put some work in the weight room. You got to get ready for it. So it's a process of the, not only the technique, obviously the physical part of it as well. We focus on running and stretching. Yeah. We don't do a lot in the weight room at all. You know, so if you can focus on those things and trust them, that's the biggest thing too. And that's why, another reason why I like to stay in shape and I like to be able to kick and demonstrate for these guys, because I'm showing them, look, I'm 40 years older than you, you know, and look at me, look what I'm doing. You know, if I can do this, well, you know, it's the technique. It's not my physical ability, because you know, you get older, you lose that physical ability. So always try to have something to fall back on, and that's your technique.
Well, it sounds like you're very straightforward with your kids, but you're very compassionate and passionate about what you do and what you're trying to explain to them. Although, you know, you're holding them at a level of, you know, what can you do with your ability and what do you need to focus more on? But you seem to have a very good balance about you, about delivering the product, but knowing who they are as a human being. And I think that's what maybe sets your kicking camp apart. So in closing this out, can you tell us where people can get a hold of you and go down for a kicking lesson?
Yeah, proformkicking.com is our website. Proformkicking on all pretty much social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, LinkedIn. I'm on all those. So, proformkicking.com is where you can find a lot of information on what we offer. And we're locally in Jacksonville, Florida, but ever since COVID, really, and we've tried a little bit before COVID, but COVID was kind of a big turning point with regards to virtual training. So I've worked with guys in South Africa. I've got a kid that just finished up playing in the Canadian League. I think he's 22 now, but when he got in American professional football, he was 19.
Yeah.
And I worked with him over in South Africa. I've worked with a kid from Croatia and Canada and, you know, Mexico. So we had a lot of kids all over the world, really, that we've worked with. And then, you know, obviously more in the United States. But we offer a virtual coaching program that's very successful. And it really is good, because it introduces the first part of the program introduces the ProForm technique, and it goes into all the details you need to know about the ProForm technique. And then we do one-on-one privates after that to, you know, monitor their work and show them some drills and things like that.
Michael, thank you so much for being on our show. You're so gracious to be on. I appreciate it to the bottom of my heart. You do have a heart of a champion, as the show indicates. And I just thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And that is going to do it for another rendition of Chuck Pushback Live, Heart of a Champion. Remember, when you go on the YouTube to view this video or the short minute clips, hit the like button and subscribe to our YouTube page. If you're on Spotify or Apple, you know, check us out there as well. But for my producer, Joe Lee, beside me here, who's always a constant rock, go Jaguars now, especially with Peterson, right? And my executive producers, Jim Sims and CJ DeRoma. I'm Chuck Bushbeck. Mike, thank you again. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.